Hi, I'm Sophie, and this is Age Well with Dr. Sophie Schotter, a space where, together with my producer Fee, I talk to good friends and trusted experts on how they age well, whether it's their latest supplement stack, what's on their bathroom shelf, or a new biohacking device that really seems to work. Because for me, aging well is all about looking and feeling like the best possible version of ourselves, both inside as well as out. Remember, you can also find even more ideas and expert tips on my social channels at Dr. Sophie Schotter. I'd love you to come and join me over there too. So this is my show. Welcome along. As always, thank you so much for listening. And this week, we're in conversation with Trish Halpin. Trish, it's so lovely to be able to talk to you, as Fee and I are both massive fans of your podcast, Postcards from Midlife. And of course, you do this with your good friend, Lorraine Candy. Just to recap through your incredible career, you're an award-winning magazine editor with over 20 years experience at the helm of some of the UK's most iconic titles, from Marie Claire and InStyle to Red. But you've also successfully pivoted careers, and through Postcards from Midlife, you've chatted to so many equally inspiring women about entering this phase of midlife and navigating all of its challenges and transitions. So my first question is quite a big one, but what one thing emerges time and time again from all these women in midlife, and what one thing do you wish younger women knew, or possibly even proactively did, as they approach their late 40s and beyond?
Oh, well, that is a big question, but a very good one. And you're right, there are themes that come out. And I think one of the strongest ones is that we can often feel very alone at this life stage. So even though we might be at our busiest, we're working really hard, we might be raising kids, teenagers, we probably starting to look after elderly parents. Life is very busy and we could have a lot of people around us, but we can feel very lonely and isolated on the inside if, as and when we start approaching our perimenopause, because things start going a bit haywire, sort of emotionally, mentally, physically. And we hear so often, both from our podcast listeners and on our private Facebook group, women say, oh my God, I thought it was just me. I hadn't realised it was just me. Because I think this phase of life, these changes can creep up on you. It's not like you suddenly wake up one day and it's like, oh, all the symptoms happen and you're in perimenopause. It can creep up on you, and then questions about your identity, who am I, what am I doing with my life, all of those things can start surfacing. And I think the aging process, as we see ourselves aging as well, we can start looking in the mirror and think, oh, who am I anymore?
Yeah. Oh, all of this is ringing so true. I think people nodding along to this, it feels so resonant. But in terms of career shifts, do you miss the hustle? How do you feel about this idea of a lot of us identifying or feeling validated, at least through our work or our job titles? Have you had to work through any stuff, any emotions there?
Yes, I really have. I've told myself I have to stop saying I used to be. I used to be the editor of Marie Claire, introducing myself in that way, because I think, again, we just define ourselves by our roles in life, by our jobs, by whether we're parents, whether we're married to someone or a partner. And that's not how we should be thinking about ourselves and how we describe who we are. This is something that I've learned over the last 5 years since I left the world of glossy magazines. But for me personally, when I left, I felt very burnt out. I was exhausted. We'd been through a big redundancy process with all of the team that I had to manage. So it was a very kind of difficult thing to step away and choose to step away from what has essentially been my life for nearly 30 years in the world of magazines. But I felt ready for it, but I didn't know what was coming next. And I think quite often that is, it's a very uncomfortable feeling. If you're used to going at 100 miles an hour, you know the direction of travel, your career is on this trajectory. When you suddenly stop, that is very, very uncomfortable. But it's actually very, very good, because what it does is it gives you the time and the space to take a pause, to think. Now, that wasn't actually my intention, because I thought, oh, I'll just have a couple of weeks off and then I'll get back out there. I'll find another job. I'll do something else. I'll think about what's next. But actually COVID happened. And so I was forced to stop. And I'd already got this kind of side hustle idea going with Lorraine of like this podcast. And so we launched it then, and timing was everything, because podcasts, there weren't huge, well, there was a lot around, but not as many as there are now. And women were looking for something to listen to on their walks, escaping from their families.
Masks
their
on.
Solo watching COVID. Exactly, masks on. And I think that timing for us was really good, because it was the right topic and the right time. So, and it just took off. And did I plan any of it? No, I did not. But it's been a wonderful ride.
Love that. We're diving in with all the big questions up front. But I'd also love to talk about how you manage your time, including your relationship with your phone and email and to-do lists. On a very tangible level, what really works for you, if anything?
I do have to compartmentalise. I'm not one of these people who can just be on my phone and checking in on emails all day long, because it would drive me absolutely insane. So I try and have a hard stop come 6 o'clock in the evening. Although when you work from home, it's a bit harder, I think, to have that hard stop, because obviously when you're leaving an office, you can mentally switch off. And I don't look at things before about 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning. Whereas my colleague, she's sending messages from when she gets up at 7 o'clock in the morning, because that's her really productive. She likes to get up and get going straight away. So I've had to kind of manage that. We've had to manage that between us, because I'm a, like, I start when I start, which is at 9:30, and she likes to do a couple of hours, then have a break. And then, so it's not just managing your own time, but it's also managing how you respond to other people. I think that's really important to try and keep you sane in all of this. And I'm very much a, I sit down at 9:30 and I write my to-do list and I do my times. I'll say, right, 9:30 to 10:30, I'm going to be prepping ideas for the podcast, or I'll be thinking about ideas for the Substack newsletter that we do, or I do it hour by hour, because I was finding that I wasn't getting enough done in the day. I felt like I was finishing the day with a lot hanging over me. And by being very precise in my list of what to do, I realised I was just putting too much on there. So it wasn't me not doing enough. It was just that I had unrealistic expectations of what I could do in the day. So by writing it out in that way on a sheet of paper, normally I type everything either into my laptop or on notes, but doing it on a sheet of paper somehow for me makes it very tangible, and I can tick it off, I can cross it off. And yeah, and then I feel like I'm achieving as much as I need to achieve.
Yeah, I think you can't quite beat a pen and paper ticking off, as you say. On a more day-to-day level, can you go through with us your morning routine? What are the habits and rituals that have really stuck, including any wellness protocols, supplements, any brands? Though Sophie is going to ask you more specifically about skincare in a moment. What is your daily routine in terms of diet and exercise and just the stuff that you do, habits and rituals?
So I'm an early riser, about 6:30, 6:45. And I like to do my, what I call housekeeping pottering around the household.
Love it.
Because it just to warm the body up, really, to get moving, get going. I don't want to get up and go straight into doing exercise. I want to get up and just start moving. So I'll do my pottering and then I'll do my exercise. And I love, this is the joy of working from home and working for myself, is that I can schedule every morning. I can do something. I always do some mobility, some warm-up exercise. As we age, our joints, we really need to think about our joints and our mobility and our flexibility of our skeleton and our wrists, our ankles. So I'll always start with at least 10, 15 minutes of mobility. And then I'll either go for a swim, I'll go and do a Pilates class, or I will do a strength training. Mm. So I try and incorporate a mix of all of those things into my week. And usually I'm done and dusted and sitting down for breakfast with my husband by about 8:45. And then ready to start work at about 9:30. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. What kind of Pilates do you do?
I do mat, and I have been doing reformer because they started introducing that into my gym, and I do really like it. But I'm actually training to be a Pilates teacher at the moment, which I'm really enjoying. I've been doing Pilates for over 20 years. I did yoga for many years before that. But for me, Pilates is the exercise that it just ticks all the boxes, especially as we get older. I just think it's so amazing for your strength, your flexibility, your mobility, and that joint health that I was talking about. So I'm really focusing on more mat classes at the moment, because that's what you train in mat, obviously, first, because you've got to get the fundamentals and the basics right, maybe before you can move on to reformer.
I wondered if there's anything you do or take that works specifically for either brain health or for mental health, but also bone health, which I think is often the missing piece for a lot of midlife women.
Yes, yeah, totally agree with you there, Sophie. I think it's so easy to forget, isn't it, our bones? We just take them for granted. But again, as we come into those perimenopausal years, the drop in estrogen is really going to affect your bones, your bone health, because estrogen, well, estrogen does so many different things all over your body, but your bone health in particular. And I actually had something called a DEXA scan, because I'm very small person. If you're very small as well, and you're in perimenopause, chances are your bones are not going to have the density and strength that they need. And I did in fact find out that I was osteopenic, which is the precursor to osteoporosis. And I then went on HRT. It was all about the same time. I then went on HRT, really started focusing a bit more on strength training. And then I had a DEXA scan the following year and my bones were in really good form. So I was
amazing.
Really, so you can make that change. So definitely strength training for your bones. Consider HRT if that is right for you. Obviously, speak to your GP about it. And then in terms of brain health, I think omega-3 and B-complex are really important vitamins. I don't take loads and loads of vitamins, but having talked to so many experts and nutritionists over the years, these are the ones that I think, that and vitamin D3 and K2. So those three, B-complex, omega-3 and vitamin D, are really non-negotiables for me. But those help with your brain cells, your brain health and your energy levels too.
Mm. What about your evening routine and how do you manage sleep? And tacked onto that, third question, how has your relationship with alcohol changed at all over the years, if it has changed?
Oh, goodness. Okay, we'll start with that one because that's quite straightforward. Yes, it gets so much harder with alcohol.
Right.
I just found my tolerance for it and tolerance for hangovers and all of that. It's just, I'm just not interested anymore. But I've had to consciously stop drinking wine because it's so easy to tip over with wine, I think, in a way that if you just have a gin and tonic or a beer, I can have one or two and then I'm really quite happy with that. But I think with wine, you get such a quick buzz off it. And that is what's really delicious and really nice. And then you're like, oh, just have another glass. And then suddenly you're drinking three glasses. You've done three glasses in an hour. And it's like, oh my goodness. But, you know, I very much are like Friday night, Saturday night, have a couple of drinks. And yeah, the wine, I do like it though, which is the problem. I just really like wine. So I just try and mentally think, right, I'm going to have two glasses and then I'm going to stop, or I'll, I don't know, try and have an approach that isn't just go crazy on it. And then in terms of evening routines, yeah, I love to cook. So I'm vegetarian. I really enjoy cooking. I enjoy, again, the whole sort of looking after myself. I think in terms of my physical health is exercise and nutrition, how I feed myself, how I nurture my body and my brain with the food that I eat. So I'm very, and I think, again, this comes from the fact that I've interviewed so many cooks, nutritionists over the years. So I'm fortunate in the sense that I've got a good understanding of diet and nutrition. So I love kind of Dr. Rupi Aujla's books. He's very good. He's got a new one out on how to get more protein in your diet, which as a vegetarian, I think I probably struggle with. But his book's got lots of, I do eat fish recipes and lots of tofu tempeh and lots of beans and pulses and lots of quick ways to get more protein. I also really love Melissa Hemsley. Hemsley's books as well, and Anna Jones. So I like to cook. So I'm empty nest. My twins are both away at university. So it's just me and my husband and the dog and the cat. So like to sit down together, have our food. Naturally, this is what my body naturally does. I naturally have like 5-hour gaps between eating, which again, nutritionists recommend, but I found that I was falling into that anyway. So I'll have a 5-hour gap between breakfast and lunch, 5-hour gap between lunch and dinner. So which means I normally end up eating around 7:30 with my husband. I'm not hungry before then and I don't need to snack, which is really good because of the way that I eat. So we'll eat together and then it's plonk on the sofa and watch something on Netflix. Yeah, and bedtime is around this is going to sound terrible, but Monday to Thursday, about 9.30, 9.45, which is early, but I find that by the time I've gone upstairs, well, I've actually sorted the cat and dog out, gone upstairs, done my skincare regime, got into bed, it's gone 10, and I like to read a book, drink a cup of chamomile while I'm reading my book, and then it's lights out. And then in terms of sleep, the game changer was HRT again. Menopause, perimenopause can really disrupt your sleep, whether it's just waking with anxiety or night sweats or temperature problems. It's a really disruptive time for your sleep. And again, going on HRT, so the combination of estrogen, which I've already mentioned, and then progesterone, which is the other, that in the evening, and it's just, it helps you sleep. So I generally sleep through the night now, which, as someone who spent a lot of years when I was raising my twins having no sleep and also then going into the perimenopause years having very disrupted sleep, to be able to go to bed and sleep is just, oh my goodness, it's wonderful.
In bed at 9:30.
I know.
Love it.
Or heading up the stairs at 9:30. Yeah.
Finding a sleep over at yours, Trish.
Which leads us on to skincare. As you head up those stairs to the bathroom.
Yes.
What products and brands do you use, rate and love? Hair care, bath oils, body products. And also, do you have any regular treatments or tweakments? And if so, who or what do you recommend?
Yeah. Okay. There's lots there. Again, one of the joys of working in women's glossy magazines was that I was very lucky that I got to try so many different types of skincare brands and still do, really. But the ones that I come back to, I just like a quite a simple routine. I always cleanse every night. I'll cleanse like with a muslin cloth, so you get that slight exfoliation as well. And I, for cleansing, I use something really simple. It could be like CeraVe or a Lizzo. I don't think you need to spend a fortune on a cleanser. And then I exfoliate probably once a week with something very gentle, maybe like a Ren product. But then, so sorry, back to the nighttime routine. So it'll be cleanse, and then I will just use a serum like an Estee Lauder Advanced Night Repair, and then a face cream. At the moment, I'm using a Clarins one, actually. It's a firming night cream, and always hand cream, because I just, my hands are so dry all the time. So I have to always have to use hand cream at night and first thing in the morning. And I like a L'Occitane, a shea butter hand cream. I just think you can't get a better one than that. It's absolutely fabulous. And then something I do, which I've started doing recently, because we did a podcast on this, I've been using the Current Body LED mask. You're probably familiar with those, Sophie, the LED infrared masks. And I've been finding that really, really good for my skin. So I do it every other morning, and it's 10 minutes. So I just do it, dry my face when I come out of the shower, put this mask on and get on with everything else that I'm doing with body lotions. I love just Aveeno, again, a simple body lotion. Or if I'm going to treat myself, I like Wellida. That's how you pronounce it. Wellida. They're beautiful. It's a very lovely body moisturiser. But then I've got this mask on, and what I'm finding is that it's making the tone of my skin more even. It definitely feels a bit firmer. And one of my sort of bugbears, or one of the things that probably concerns me most about my skin, is sunspots. So I've got very sort of fair complexion, and too many years of being out in the sun in my younger days, I do have sort of sunspots on my face. And those are the things that I like to try and target. I think the LED mask is definitely helping with that. I don't know that you can ever fully get rid of them, so it's just trying to make them fade. And there are topical treatments you can use. I've forgotten the name of it, but I tried, instead of the laser, this topical treatment, but I found it too strong on my skin. It just really, it makes it peel off, and I just didn't like it very much. Bit of a wimp on that front. But I know that there are products that have just regular skincare products that can target sunspots. I was using a brand called And Begin last year, which is part of Skin and Me. I think they're rebranding it at the moment. Basically, it's a sort of prescription skincare for 40 plus. Again, when you get into your perimenopausal years, because obviously the estrogen, again, the decrease in estrogen does affect your skin. And that, actually, I found that really good on the sunspots, in the sense of, I don't think I'm going to get rid of them, but just get them to be less prominent. And of course, I'm really religious with my sun cream. Probably have for the last 20 years been really religious with my sun cream. I just wish maybe I'd been a bit more diligent with it in my younger years.
Oh, I know. I'm shivering thinking about being in my 20s as a Celt and just going under sunbeds like, oh, crikey. Yes. It's just awful, isn't it? Just awful.
Exactly.
So, again, as you're a former Glossy Mag editor, we would be missing a trick not to ask you about makeup as well. Tell us as much or as little as you like. I mean, I always think let's stick to foundations because it's, to me, I actually wear less as I get older. I find it quite aging.
Yes.
So what about any trusted products, brands? Where are you at with makeup?
Yes. So I like to use, at the moment, I'm using By Terry Serum Concealer. Mm-hmm. She's that amazing makeup artist. So I'm using her serum concealer and I just dab it on the sunspots, maybe a little bit under the eyes or anywhere where I feel like I just, and it's a really nice, smooth, even coverage. And then I'll go for like a Charlotte Tilbury, the Healthy Glow. And it really works. People will say to me, my goodness, have you been somewhere? And it's not in a fake tan way, but just in a sort of glowy. Mm. So it's quite a sheer light. Because again, like you, Fiona, I find less is more as I get older in terms of coverage. But I was in Space NK the other day and they gave me a little sample of a BB cream by Herborian. I'm going to pronounce that wrong. Herborian, which is one of these Korean skincare and makeup brands. And I've been finding that really nice. So I might have to go back and actually buy
when we interviewed Alice Hart Davis, that was the one that she recommended, wasn't it, Soph? Do you remember?
Yeah.
Oh, well, if Alice recommends it, I'm definitely going for it because she really knows what she's talking about. And then in terms of actual makeup, I've got to keep these eyebrows under control. They're quite, they've been getting more and more rogue. I've got quite thick eyebrows and actually there's so many great eyebrow gels, but the one I'm really liking is the Boots number 7 one. I think that works really well. And I go basic on mascara, so Maybelline eyelash curlers, Maybelline mascara. And then if I was splashing out, I'd probably go for a Victoria Beckham, her eyeshadow sticks. I think they're so great. They're such a lovely texture and the colours are beautiful. They're that sort of shimmery, lovely effect on the eyes, which I think, again, as you get older, that you want lightness rather than heaviness around the eyes.
Yeah. So if I think you're a Victoria Beckham fan, aren't you, the eyeshadows?
I do love her makeup, yeah. Can you pass on any practical or tangible tips from one of your previous podcast guests? So whether health, beauty, wellness, or something completely unrelated.
Right. Gosh, so many tips. We try and make the podcast, as you're doing, Sophie, as practical as possible in terms of advice. And we have guests from those areas that you said, but also therapists, parenting experts. A beauty one would be, this was actually Eve Cameron, who used to be the beauty director of Good Housekeeping magazine. She said, 1st of March, that's when you start your sun cream. So I'm like, right, okay. And it's quite a good date to remember, isn't it? Because you do think, oh, 1st of March, we're nearly in spring. Yeah. So I always follow that one. And I'm going to give you a parenting one, actually, because there's so many things stick with me. But to your first question about how women can feel at this life stage, if we're at the coalface of parenting and we've got tricky teens, teenage is such a hard time for young people, those hormonal years and when they're trying to forge their identity. And we had a parenting expert called Lisa D'Amour on the show. She had so much great advice, but she was so reassuring in the sense that she said, like, if you're really struggling with a teenager, it's not you failing as a parent, it's them excelling at being teenagers.
Brilliant.
Which I really liked because we just blame ourselves and what we're doing wrong. And we have to give them the space and to think, right, okay, this is what they're programmed to do. It's going to manifest this separation, this identity forming. They are programmed to do this and it might be really difficult for them or it might be easier for them, but all you can do is you can just be there for them and listen to them when they need to. But it's quite hard to push against and to try and control when you're in that phase of parenting.
Oh God, yeah. As a podcast producer myself, who's I've previously worked in radio for many years, I'd love to geek out a bit on your experience of this amazing medium. As I was saying, for years and years and years, podcasts are incredible. And now, of course, everyone knows they're incredible. How have you found it? The good, the bad, everything in between. And I'm guessing, you know, feel free to, if you can, chime in on behalf of Lorraine as well, because I know you do it together.
Sure.
What advice would you give to somebody looking to build a podcast or a podcast brand?
Well, I think it's got to be something, your topic has to be something that you are really passionate about and you want to explore and find out more. And I mean, being a journalist certainly helps. Because you have that curious mind. We research our guests and our topics in the way that we would if we were writing an article for a newspaper.
Same.
Or a magazine. I'm sure you're exactly, Fiona, you're a journalist. So that, I think about how much research, how much you want to delve into a topic or into a guest or whatever your topic is. You know, there are some brilliant podcasts out there that are just friends chatting and they probably don't have to prep very much at all. And that's great. And you can learn a lot from that. But we wanted our podcast to be as practical and helpful as possible. And I think it's just in our DNA, having been journalists for all of our careers, that we will do our research and think about what our audience really want to know from any particular guest. But it's great fun and there's no restrictions. You can make it as long as you want, you can make it as short as you want. It's the printed page or a digital article, we always had restrictions, whereas this, we can do what we want when we want to do it. It's brilliant.
Which podcast guests or themes have been most memorable for you?
The ones that touch me the most, if that's the right word, are the therapists. When we have therapists on the show, because they give such heartfelt and helpful advice that really touches you inside. So we've had like Julia Samuel on, Philip Perry and Dr. Emma Kennedy. They were so helpful. And also Donna Lancaster. I ended up actually doing her course after I first met her because she was just so impressive in terms of her helping you through that. Who am I? What do I want from this next phase of my life? Almost like a spiritual part of you, trying to understand and reconnect with that, or maybe connect for the first time. So I really like those. But my biggest fangirl one is actually somebody who you might not know who she is, but for me, she's a bit of a legend. She's an Australian writer called Robin Davidson, and she wrote a book back in the 1970s called Tracks, which was about her. She trained these wild camels and rode wild camels across the Australian desert. And National Geographic did the most incredible features on her. Anyway, she wrote a book called Tracks, which was one of my favourite books. And also a film was made with Mia Wasikowska and Adam Driver a few years ago. So we actually had Robin, the real life Robin, on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And she's in her 70s now. And I was just like, oh my goodness,
so
you are the most remarkable woman.
Yeah, I'm so glad you got to meet her. Oh, that's so lovely. We have a couple of, I guess, more quickfire questions to wrap up.
Yeah.
Sort of staying on the podcast theme, but a bit more. Can you recommend a podcast and a book and an Instagram account?
Oh, right.
Tough.
Podcast. Three in a row. Okay. Right. There's a new podcast that's just come out on the BBC called Stalked, which I've got lined up to listen to on my phone. It's about a young woman who literally her life was hatched, British, young British woman, and she just met this guy and then suddenly her life started unraveling. All of her accounts were hacked, everything was hacked, and this went on for years and years and nobody would help her, the police wouldn't help her. And it's this story of being stalked as a young woman and also in the digital space, what can go wrong. So I'm quite fascinated by that. I like things about society and the modern world, and so I like listening to things like that. Book, oh goodness, anything by Elizabeth Strout, Anne Tyler, or Barbara Kingsolver. Last year, I think Demon Copperhead, that was my favourite book. I think it was last year, it might have been the year before. That was my favourite book of the year last year, Demon Copperhead. I thought it was absolutely amazing. It's a kind of modern day retelling of David Copperfield set in the American sort of Rust Belt, I think. Then, Instagram, I'm going to say Caroline Circuits. I don't know whether you know Caroline Idians. She's a fitness instructor, personal trainer, who she's absolutely brilliant. She's just been on our podcast, in fact. And she does these short 20, 25 minute workouts all about strength for women in midlife. And she just started her classes online during COVID and she has exploded. She's now got 2 million followers on Instagram. and her workouts are brilliant. She's brilliant. So I would, yeah, if you're looking for a place to start with strength training, because we've been talking about that quite a lot, that would be a good place.
I actually am. So thank you. I genuinely am.
Oh, good.
So this is brilliant. Yes. Thank you so much.
Yes. And finally, where in the UK can you recommend for true rest and relaxation? So a hotel or a spa, town or a village or both?
Oh, well, so there's so many lovely places. But I love Scotland. I love the west coast of Scotland. There's a little village called Plockton that is so beautiful that literally it looks like if Disney made a film of like Scotland and the Scottish Lochs, that's what it would look like. It's so beautiful. Also the North Norfolk coast, Wells, Holcombe Beach, all along there. We've been going there for years. I absolutely love it. So if anywhere I can walk and swim, I'm very happy.
For all of you listening, do follow Trish on socials at Trish of the Day. And of course, do follow and listen to Postcards from Midlife, which we'll link to in the show notes. And bear in mind, it also has a very popular private Facebook group as well. So again, we'll put all of this in the show notes. Thank you so much, Trish, for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been so much fun.
And that ends this week's podcast. If you want to find out more about me and my work, or maybe book a consultation, head to drsophieschotter.com and you can find me on socials at drsophieschotter. And again, thank you so much for listening.